I don't know if you've ever thought about if you just had a few minutes left, what word you would want to leave, who you'd want to speak to, what you'd want to tell them. I wonder what still needs said. Or, it's probably not a new message, what needs repeating? What would you want to remind them of? I had the experience as a young man while interning and doing a pastoral internship to miss seeing an intersection, which wasn't really the significant factor. It was missing seeing the 3-ton truck carrying the trailer pulling a tractor that would have been really good to have seen. And I was knocked unconscious. My car crumpled and taken to the hospital. And one of the things to remember is that when people are unconscious and unable to communicate, one sense they often still have is hearing. And I'm hearing all these people talk, and they're saying, well, how bad is it? In fact, they said, well, we can't tell just yet, but there's bound to be several internal organs. If he's got family, you better call them. I was hearing them say that, but they weren't hearing me. At least that was my perception of how it was going. And in some time, I started to be able to... They started to be able to hear a little bit of my speaking, and by that time, the pastor I was training under had arrived at the hospital. And I called, because I could hear his voice, and I called for Jim. And he came over close and bent down close to me to hear me. And you see, I had a day lined up of people I was going to see. And so I wanted him to let them know I wouldn't be arriving. He ever after teased me that if I only had 5 minutes left, I would, you see, because he was the one the doctors had told you better call the family. He said, if you only had 5 minutes left, you'd use it to cancel appointments. Well, that isn't what the Apostle John did. You see, with the moments he had left, he didn't cancel appointments. He focused on what really mattered. What would you want those you care about to know for sure, to hang on to in even the most difficult times? Final reminders. It's not a new message. I also have another hospital memory of going in to see a mentor of mine, someone who had trained me in the things of the Lord. And I was going in to see him knowing that he was near death. And when I went to see him, he greeted Brenda and I. And he hardly had any energy for any voice. He just didn't have the strength. But what he did say is he called us by name and he said, I love you. Afterwards, Brenda said, what else would there be to say? Well, it's kind of like that in 2 John. You see, it's that kind of message that we need to... the things we need to say. And you might even want to think about if there's some things for the people you care about that maybe you haven't said or that bear repeating because they matter. And while you have the moment to give them word, you want to. Let's have a little historical background on this passage. It's in the very later years of John's life. Those studying this estimate that he may have been a man in his 90s. The emperor at the time of Rome was Domitian. Known as the great persecutor of the Christian church, having killed thousands of Christians. That might explain a bit why this letter's a little cryptic. It doesn't name anyone specifically. It doesn't name John. He refers to himself as the elder. And he's writing that lady chosen by God and her children. He finishes the letter talking about that he sends greetings from the children of your sister who was chosen by God. We, for a number of years, used to correspond with a missionary friend of ours who was serving in Tibet. And our letters never referenced Jesus. They never named people. We would talk about Jesus as our beloved brother and example. And our letters were written so as not to identify those who would be possible subjects of persecution. And not to make, you see, the missionary friend we had was there and able to be there as she was teaching English. And she was. And while she was teaching English, she was introducing as many people as she could to know Jesus. Well, it's that kind of a letter, in fact, written probably to some of the very people that the emperor, you see, this is the emperor who had the Colosseum enlarged, and so that they could watch the games of martyring Christians. This is, and you see, he writes them, and in verse 4 he says, it's great joy to find some of them, some of your children, living in the truth. That also makes me think why it wasn't written to an individual. You see, because it wouldn't really be a great encouragement if someone wrote me and said, Bob, I hear some of your children are in the truth. You see, that would be kind of a backhanded sort of a thing to say, well, you know, there's some of them. But it was indeed some. So he writes as the elder, probably the last surviving of the original 12 disciples. And as we're considering who to choose from among us as elders, he gives us both an example of what it is to be a shepherd, an elder, and he gives us guidelines for what are the essential things we should be looking in to someone's life to see if they are qualified as teachers. The essentials of truth and love. That's kind of the background. So let's read the passage. The elder, to the lady chosen by God and to her children, whom I love in truth, and not I only, but also all who know the truth, because the truth which lives in us and will be with us forever. Grace, mercy, and peace from the God and Father and from Jesus Christ, the Father's Son, will be with us in truth and love. It has given me great joy to find some of your children walking in truth. Just as the Father commanded us. And now, my dear lady, I'm not writing you a new command, but one you have had from the beginning. I ask that we love one another. And this is love, that we walk in obedience to his commands. As you have heard from the beginning, his command is that you walk in love. I say this because many deceivers who do not acknowledge Jesus Christ as coming in the flesh have gone out into the world. Any such person is a deceiver and an antichrist. Watch out that you do not lose heart what we have worked for, but that you may be rewarded fully. Anyone who runs ahead and does not continue in the teachings of Christ does not have God. Whoever continues in the teaching has both the Father and the Son. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not take them into your house. Do not welcome them. Anyone who welcomes them shares in their wicked work. I have much to write you, but I do not want to use paper and ink. Instead, I hope to visit you and talk with you face to face so that our joy may be complete. The children of your sister, who is chosen by God, send their greetings. The truth about Jesus Christ, Son of God, fully God, fully man. Jesus referred to himself as the way, the truth, and the life. And so that when we read this passage, he could just as easily have written to the chosen lady by God and her children, whom I love in Jesus. And not only I, but also all who know Jesus. Because Jesus lives in us. He's talking about the only truth that really matters, the only enduring truth. Remember Pilate's question? What is truth? The question could have been much more powerfully correct to say, who is truth? And truth was standing before him. And so, in the midst of all of the things, and just with a little while to write an encouragement to them, either before his life was done, or before theirs might be done, he wanted them to hang on to the one thing that matters forever. The one who is the way, the truth, and the life. That no man comes to the Father but through him. And so he reminds them of just this Jesus, because he says that he offers them grace and mercy and peace from God. That God is the source of those things, grace, mercy, and peace. And from the Lord Jesus. And it says, will be in us truth and love. The result of actually experiencing God's grace, mercy, and peace, to be a recipient of God's good gift, if you realize it was a gift, and if you're enjoying the peace of knowing that he saved you, then he says, it will manifest itself in you living a life of truth and love. That's who you will become. The notion that Another way to say that is, when you realize what a good gift you've received from God, you'll shine. Jesus will shine out of you. Have you noticed that among people that know him, when they shine because they know that they're chosen, that they're forgiven, that they're alive, and the life they have is a gift given to them by God? They shine. And so in verse 4, the apostle says, you know, it gives me great joy. Great joy to see your children living by truth, living by Jesus. You see, and he talks about, you know, it's not just something they think or something that they've given lip service to. They're walking in it. They're walking in truth. They're walking in Jesus. They're walking in love. They're acting upon it. Their lives demonstrate their commitment to Jesus. We were created to walk with God. You remember that's how it was in the garden. They walked with God. And it reminded me of what's written in the Psalms. That's first Psalm. Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the seat of mockers. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. He's like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever he does prospers. He's rich. He's rich, the man who walks with God. Yeah, that was how they described Enoch, wasn't it? He walked with God and was no more. You see, our lives could be defined by how we live walking with Jesus. Walking in him, aware of him, appreciative of his gift, and so that we live the love he showed us. Now, he says, I see that some of your children are living by truth. You see, none of us get born into the faith. We have to choose to make it our own. I spent some time with some people there, you know, in their late teens and early 20s recently, and they've been questioning whether they believe or want the faith of their parents. And of course, it isn't available to them. They'll have to find their own faith. They'll have to get to know Jesus themselves. And the interesting thing is they were rejecting some of the tenets, some of the beliefs, some of the faith statements. And they were rejecting some of what they saw of the structures. But I asked them, what about Jesus? Who is Jesus to you? What do you see in him? And is he one that you would serve and follow? You see, because each one has to make it their own. And yet I know in the small group we shared in this past year, a regular subject of our prayer were how our children were doing. And our concern that they would hang on to Jesus. Yeah. We're concerned that we could lose them if they're not coming to know Christ. This week, I had a chance to meet with a man who described himself as having grown up in the church. And then he went on to describe the responsible roles within the church both his parents held, and even the mission work that they had done. And he described how he rejected all of that, and how to him the church seemed like a lot of rules. Rules that to him seemed like arrogance, judgment, that seemed narrow, restrictive. He knew the culture and he didn't want it. But what he said is, it's only recently, only in the last few years, he says, I've been beginning to know Jesus. I've been beginning to understand who he is and how I can follow him. And he said, now he wants to commit his life to serve Jesus. You see, he had to make it. That's the sort that John was having great joy over. Those who got it, who found it and made it their own. I don't know if you've made it your own. I don't know if you're following the rules your parents gave you or not. Or whether you have so gotten to know Jesus that you want to know him better and serve him more and learn to love like he loves. But that's what this book, this letter, it's a passionate plea for that to happen. So, it's not how much we know. The fellow I talked to knew a lot. He had been raised in Christian schools. He had had his belly full. It wasn't how much he knew. It wasn't how good his doctrine was. It wasn't what his theology was. It won't be the contents of our statement of faith. Because the only statement of faith we're called to is to know Jesus and become like him. The rest may be very well intended, but for many, when they read it, they'll just see rules. They'll see arrogance. They will see the need to control. What will draw men to Christ is when we invite them to see Jesus, the truth of who he is, and live it with the love he showed us to have. And then they will see him not just on the pages of the Gospels, but they'll see him rich in your lives. And it'll be so compelling that they will want to know him more and serve him. See, that's dynamic. John was writing to those who very likely were facing the risk of persecution. They could be the next ones taken into the Colosseum. They weren't going to their deaths victorious because they were good rule keepers. They weren't going to their deaths because they had a really solid grasp of their statement of faith. They were going there because they were followers of Jesus, committed and sold out to him being the way, the truth, and the life. And so that people could take their lives here, but they couldn't take them forever. And they could go victorious. They were walking with Jesus, living as he lived, And that's what brought joy to John. When have you been aware of walking in step with Jesus? Do you get those little moments when you think, yeah, that was good. That was the right place for me to be. That was the opportunity God gave me to touch a life. We were in step just then. I was in step with him. And this passage uses another phrase that I found strange and interesting. It says, not running ahead. And I tried to figure out what that meant, you know, because we're supposed to walk, we're not supposed to run ahead. I can remember many hikes with our young family. And they would be told that they needed to stay in sight of us. But, you know, they're so much up for the adventure. And they were feeling so confident and, you know, whereas their mother was very aware of there could be a grizzly around any corner. That wasn't their thought at all. Their thought was that they just wanted to get there first. And you see, John was a bit like that when he first started spending time with Jesus. He had his own ways of thinking of how he would do things. It was some time for him to get in step with Jesus. And the rushing ahead, sometimes because we're overconfident in our own ability and strength. We're not aware of how much of his guidance, and protection, and direction we need. So we rush to manage it ourselves the way we think best. We create and make a faith of our own design rather than of his. And so we're taught to walk with him. And so I wondered, who's getting joy by watching your walk? Who sees you in the way you're following after Jesus in this stage of your life, and that's giving them joy? I thought we would maybe take some time to hear who gives you joy by seeing the way they're following after Jesus. Now, we're very modest people, and we wouldn't want to embarrass any of you. So I think you could tell such stories without identifying them. You wouldn't have to name the people. You could just say that there's someone I've been watching, and I've been watching the way that that they've been pouring their lives into some other people. And that has really encouraged me. Or I've seen how much they are trying to be the kind of parent that God would have them be. And that touches my heart. So there's going to be some time for some of those good news stories for you to be able to tell us who you've been noticing that gives you joy. You know, it may be a grandchild, it may be a grandfather. It may be that it's someone who you've seen humbly serve, and you think, you know, it reminds me of Jesus. I believe that's how Jesus was, and that just gives me joy that I get to see some of that. This gave John joy. Do you suppose it could give you joy? Do you think it might be good for us to hear from one another where we've seen and sighted somebody who is walking in step with the Lord? Yeah, I think it might help. So, I'll let you kind of think about that and say, who could I describe that I've watched walking in truth, walking in love? Now, that's coming. Do you remember who wrote the letter? How he started it off? He said the elder or the shepherd. He did walk with Jesus, and over time he got in step with Jesus. He wasn't rushing off on his own agenda. He was walking in truth and in love. When we consider who would be leaders, it's of vital importance that they neither lack truth, that they're clear about who we're following, and that they not lack love. If they lack either, they are not appropriate to lead God's church. Now, that doesn't mean they are Jesus and are perfect, but it means that what we look for as essentials is that they're walking in truth and walking in love. And so that as we consider, it's not going to be those that are most knowledgeable. It may be if they're walking in truth and walking in love. It's not going to be those who have the greatest charisma, or sometimes as the world measures leadership, it's those who can command and influence and speak with great authority. We look to see if they walk in truth and do they walk in love. Are they following Jesus? Because if they're leading here and doing anything but following Jesus, then they will be leading us off track. They could lead us into legalism, rule keeping. They could lead us into the notion of humanitarianism that ignored the power of a Savior who is our hope. They must have truth, the truth of Jesus, and they must have his love. That's what we're going to be looking for. Those, and we're told to discern, to watch to see if they're walking in Christ. And in fact, and this was written to a Middle Eastern culture, a culture that put very high concern on the whole area of hospitality. And yet he said, don't welcome into this teaching role, don't welcome into the teaching roles those who either lack the concern to follow Jesus or to walk in love. And in fact, he uses very strong language because he says, if you do, you will be joining in their wickedness. Wickedness. So we need to hold in balance that those who would lead us would balance truth and love. They need to know and follow Jesus. You see, when John only had the opportunity to write a brief note, he focused on what really mattered. He did tell them, I hope to see you face to face. He did want to set an appointment. But that wasn't the reason for his writing. His reason to write them was that they would remember what really matters, to walk in truth and to walk in love. And to know and to follow Jesus. So if you lose track of everything else, don't lose track of those two things. Now, I think it's time for us to have some joy. I think it's good for us to notice when we see Christ at work in one another. And I thought initially I could have you just come up and talk about when you've been aware of feeling in the step with the Lord, and I thought you wouldn't come. So I thought if I had someone else speak of you, You don't need to be limited to just those folks that are here. It can be anyone you've seen Christ working in. But if you could let us know some of the sightings you've had of those walking in Jesus. I, this week, had a chance to meet with a young man who was wanting to know and wanting to handle the scripture in a way that honored God. So we sat down and looked at that and talked about that together. And I thought, he was trying to figure out how, as a businessman, as a young father, how he was going to do that in a way that honored Jesus. And it gave me joy that that was his desire and that I could try to encourage him in it. That was one example for me. But I bet you've had a few sightings. If you've had a few sightings of those that are... And tell us, you see, because just like with testimony, it's good for us to hear where God's at work. And so whether, in this case, you're saying where you've seen God at work in another's heart that was a joy and encouragement to you, then we also need to hear your testimony of where you have walked with the Lord and how he has helped and strengthened you to the task. One of the reasons we got together and the early Christians went from house to house, they needed to hear each other's stories. So if you have a story, perhaps you would share just your little glimpse of seeing God at work in the heart of someone that gave you joy. We'll only have time for a few, so you want to hurry to get near the front of the line.
In my life, I was raised an unbeliever. I didn't believe in the Lord at all. And I mocked the very idea of a God. But God, in his grace and love, put a lady in my path that knew the truth and loved the Lord. And it was through her example and her love to me and her example of her Christian life and showing me that she loved me and cared for me. She said, "Have you ever read the Bible?" I said, "No, it's Dutch to me." And she said, "I'll help you." And so she would come over to my house. And I thought to myself, well, if I'm going to argue with her about a God, I might as well know a little bit, because I'd never opened a Bible. I'd never been in a church. And so, as God's mercy goes, I came to put my trust in the Lord. But it was her example of her love for God and for me that brought me to the Lord, and she's just about 90 now, and she is still living her love for the Lord and for people and the truth.
Others, have you seen an example that would give you joy and perhaps the joy you could share with the rest of us?
And in my role as caretaker for my wife, I see I'm blessed with a steady stream of care workers that come in and friends that come in. And some of the experiences that I've had and continue to have certainly speak very well for the activity of Jesus in our community.
Well, in my Christian walk, I know I have many shortcomings, so I try to look for examples of women that I think I would like to aspire to be like them, and God's put a few in my path, and there is one, I mean, there's many in this church, but there's one, we can't give a name, but... that I know this person has had many struggles and trials in her life, but I see how God works in her life, how she allows God to work in her life, and how she's the type of wife that I'd like to be, the type of mother I would like to be. And so just having those examples of people around us in our midst, I think that's a real blessing, that we can, you know, when we're kind of feeling a failure in some of those areas that we know we're feeling it, it's like, I kind of think of this person and think, okay, like, what would she do? You know, how would she allow God to work in a situation? So, yeah, it gives me joy to think of this person and to know this person and to see how she walks in truth and love.
Yeah, I have a friend who lived in high level here as a physician, went up there with a young family, and up there there's no pregnancy care center, there's no women's shelter. When he would get abused women come to him, he would let them live in his house, you know, with him and his young family, despite threats of violence from the husband that would be directed at him and his kids and his wife. And when he had young women that were contemplating abortion, he basically told them he would raise their kid if they kept them. To me, that's love in action.
As a young man, I usually, like most young men, allow their friends to dictate what you think, what you believe, and things like that. One of my friends is quite an intelligent young man, big into evolution and things like that. So he said it, I believed it. I didn't look into any of the facts. I didn't look into see what was going on. I never saw any of it. I knew this young lady who worked for my dad, and she had given me countless videos, spoke to me countless times, and everything I got, I gave it to my buddy and says, will you watch it? So he did. He comes back and he says, it's garbage, Brad. It's garbage. So further on, carried on, nothing ever happened. But God kept pushing, kept pushing. One day I met this other young lady who I did like, and I followed her home and I met her dad. Her dad was an awesome guy. He sat me down, and he sat me down with the exact same videos that the other person had, the exact same time, and any questions that I had. And I went back to my buddy, and I says, buddy, what do you think about this? And he gave me answers. I looked up those answers because the young lady's dad didn't allow me to stop. If I wanted to hang out with his daughter, well, I kind of had to look at this stuff. So I kept pushing, I kept pushing, and finally there became answers where he did not have the answers for. But I needed the answers if I wanted to keep hanging out with his daughter. So I ended up going to college professors, university professors, and I says, I need an answer to this. Finally, there's enough evidence that says, well, all the stuff that my buddy for years has been teaching that says it's garbage is not garbage, that there is evidence. So just taking time out of his own day, he was a very busy man. He worked 24 hours a day, or not 24 hours, he worked literally 20 hours a day working, but he would come over to my house to spend time to show me this stuff where he didn't have time. He was a handyman who charged $5 an hour, and he had 9 kids. He had to work a lot of hours, but he came over to my house to show me that there was something more.
I wonder who's watching your walk. I'm certain that there are those that are. They are watching to see what it is that you're about, what makes you tick, why you do the things you do, why you take the time you do. And your life can give joy to others. They can give joy because they can see that you're the real deal. You actually believe this stuff, and you're actually one of Jesus' followers. There's all sorts of opportunities for that to happen. But for it to happen, you have to keep a very clear grasp on who is truth and what is love. And when those things shine, the rest will fall into place.